Section one is called The Outer Circle, Your Money Mastermind. Okay, so let me review the circles of cause. We've got a center of the target, the inner circle called money. The next level is mastery, okay, the mastery of the skills and the abilities to make the money. The next level is called motivation. The next level is called mindset. And the outer circle is your money mastermind. So what is a mastermind? How do we define mastermind in this particular situation? And why is it important? Brian Tracy, one of the most famous personal development authors and speakers, he created a program called The Psychology of Achievement, which I think is one of the most important programs that's ever been created. It was very influential to me. And in that program, he introduced the psychological idea called the reference group. Okay? The reference group. And the reference group is the group of people that you surround yourself with. Okay? Those people that you spend time with, talking to, interacting with. They might be your friends, your family, your coworkers. Now, it turns out that your reference group is probably the most powerful influence on you. Now, we like to think that we think for ourselves and that we created our own ways of thinking, but turns out that we actually inherited most of it from our reference group, from those people around us. And most of it started back before we can even remember the people around us and remember the kinds of things that they were saying and doing. Now, what Brian Tracy pointed out in The Psychology of Achievement that I found so interesting is that if a person leaves their reference group and they go away, let's say for a couple of weeks, to an immersive, intensive seminar learning environment, and they learn a bunch of new skills and they get all excited about using them, but then they go home and they hang out with the exact same people, that within, oh, maybe a couple or a few weeks, they will have reverted back to their old selves. Okay, their reference group has very powerful gravity that keeps them who they were. And that no change sticks. That's how powerful it is. Even if you go out and you learn something new on your own, that it won't stick if you stay in your current reference group. Tom Rath, the famous author, he wrote a book called Vital Friends. And in this book, he pointed to research that shows that we are essentially an average of the five or so closest people to us. So if you look at the people around you and they're all overweight, well, you're probably going to be overweight. If you look at the people closest to you and they're all in really good physical shape, well, you're probably in really good physical shape. And this goes for self-esteem, it goes for income, on and on and on. So you're essentially an average of the closest people to you. Napoleon Hill, in what's probably the most famous success book of all time, Think and Grow Rich, he introduces a concept called the mastermind. And this is where I got the term from originally. And after studying over 650 of the world's most successful people for over 20 years of his life, and then summarizing everything that he learned into a series of books called The Law of Success, and then summarizing that multi-volume series into one book called Think and Grow Rich, he summed it all up and said that you have to have a mastermind of success-minded people that you meet with, work with regularly, who are all on the path to success. And he even went as far as to say that no great power and success is even possible in life without the mastermind. Okay, now this is a guy that went and did way more work and research than you and I will ever do, than probably all of us will ever do combined. Okay, spent his whole life essentially trying to figure out what leads to success and came up with this idea that no great power, no great success is possible without the power of the mastermind. So hopefully you're beginning to see just how important this is. So there are two ways to mastermind. Okay, one way is unconsciously, and the other is consciously. Now, it turns out that most of us mastermind unconsciously. We go through the world, and we don't have a lot of discretion about who we allow into our lives and who we allow to influence us. Most of us are also not aware of how influential other people are on us. We don't understand just how much they influence our beliefs, our mindset, how we think about the world, how we interact with others, the way we communicate. We don't really get it. Okay. Now, most of us also have the illusion that we do get it and we're doing all of this stuff consciously, and that's self-deception, and that's a topic that we can't take the time to dive into here. But the point is, it's a big challenge. The other way to do it, of course, is consciously. Okay, it's to start consciously putting people in your life and consciously putting yourself in situations where you're surrounded by the types of people that you would like to be more like or become, so to speak. And this is something that requires some intention, and we'll be learning about this a little bit more later in the program. But for now, the most important distinction for you to understand is that the mastermind, your reference group, your vital friends, that this determines who you are, and that if you do it unconsciously, you're going to be like a ship out at sea that doesn't have a rudder on it, that just is tossed in a million different directions. And being on the ship, you may have a wheel in your hand and you may think that you're steering, but you're really not. And that what we want to do is we want to pick up this ability to craft our mastermind. In other words, we want to take control of the most powerful condition that we can put in place in our own lives that makes sure that we do and become what we need to do and become. We need to do it with intention. So let's talk a little bit about your identity, okay, and kind of who you are and how that works, okay, just for a second. We're going to get more into identity a little later in the program, but for now, what I'd like to suggest to you is that your identity is basically a patchwork quilt. So we all tend to think of ourselves as being original, unique beings that consciously created our lives the way that they are, that we thought up our own ideas, that we came up with our own ways of thinking about things. Now, it turns out that we're really much closer to a patchwork quilt. Little pieces of how others think, of how they respond, of how they talk, of how they behave, of how they believe, of how they approach the world. They're all just chunks borrowed from others and then woven together automatically. You think it was your idea to stand up and walk? Well, not exactly. Right? Turns out that we learned that from someone else too. Okay, we learned how to walk because we watched other people walking. And at that point in our life, we got the motor skills and the ability to imitate to the point where we said, that looks pretty cool. And the way that we know this is they've done experiments with blind children, okay, who are blind from birth. And blind children don't try to stand up and walk on their own because they don't see anybody else doing it. And so if it goes down to something as simple as walking, just imagine how powerful this is when it comes to things like how we talk, how we respond to things emotionally, how we think, what we believe, and how we approach the world. So for our identity, okay, we basically have two choices. Do nothing and let it happen, or give ourselves better role models to learn these bits from and make our patchwork quilt from all day long. Now, this is such a critical point that I want to underline it a few times and put stars next to it and, you know, circle it with a yellow highlighter so that we really look at it. After looking at psychology, behavior, motivation now for over 15, coming up on 20 years, what I've seen is that we humans have a very, very powerful rationalization system. We have the ability to look at any situation and make it mean just about anything. And what we usually do with this system is we try to make ourselves right and other people wrong, and we try to stay out of really examining ourselves. We just weave a story all day long that makes us good and smart and everybody else pretty bad and pretty dumb. The problem here is that we also have another mechanism running that's copying everybody else, that's imitating them, that's literally borrowing little pieces from them that we're not even conscious of. Okay, the phrases that you use, right? You use them because someone taught them to you. If you've got favorite sayings that you like to say, if you trace back where you got it from somebody else. Your mannerisms, your self-esteem, most of these things in one way or another were learned, patchwork quilted together from other people, and it was all done unconsciously. Now, this sets up a little bit of a paradox, of course, because if your mastermind is so influential, your reference group, your friends are so influential to you, and you've just kind of unconsciously become all of this stuff, where does free will and choice fit into the mix? And are you really responsible for your own life? Well, the way I think it works is something like this. Stephen Covey says, awareness builds its own momentum. I think that when we don't know this, okay, when no one's told us just how much that we have been wired to imitate other people and patchwork quilt our identity together from others, when nobody's told us this, we didn't learn it, we didn't know. We had no way of knowing. But once we learn it, and then we look around and we see it, and we actually start to understand, oh, look at this. I'm kind of like a robot just copying all these things. And I like to tell myself a story that rationalizes it, but hey, really, I'm just imitating people. That's when we wake up for a moment. Okay, that's when things all start to change. That's when the awareness begins to build its own momentum. So now we have, again, two choices. We can do nothing and let it happen, or we can give ourselves better role models to learn our patchwork quilt bits from all day long. And it's up to you, of course, which path to take. Let's talk now for a moment about friction. Okay, friction. And in this program, we're going to use this term to describe any place where things are rubbing up against each other, stopping each other, causing, you know, rash with each other, so to speak. Friction is when someone puts sand in your gas tank and it gets inside of your motor and it just gums it up. Okay? So a large percentage of people, probably most people that I've met, they really live in a world, in a paradigm in their mind, and that means a real world to them, full of friction, problems, lots of bad experiences, etc. Now, we're going to dive more into the mindset section kind of on this topic, but what's really interesting is that most of this is actually learned, okay, at an unconscious level, patchwork quilted together, by being around parents, family members, friends, people at work who are literally addicted to their struggling, addicted to their drama, unconsciously using emotional outbursts to get attention, putting things in their life that cause all kinds of problems down the road. The way I think of it is literally most people go through their life planting seeds in the ground of future conflict and then watering them. And then when the conflicts pop up and start to sprout, they go, like, you know, the old movie Napoleon Dynamite, they go, gosh, I hate this. This sucks. When they were the ones that planted all the seeds in the beginning. And these seeds were planted when they built relationships with dramatic people, when they took jobs in environments that were full of people that were planting their own seeds of future conflict and drama and so forth. So what we want to do here is we want to remove friction as much as possible. We want to remove friction, and we want to make it so that all of the parts of our life, both inside in our inner game and outside in the real world, and the interactions between the two, all happen smoothly without a lot of friction. So at each of these five levels of cause, each of the five cause circles of mastermind, mindset, motivation, mastery, and money, what we're going to do is we're going to remove friction. And we're going to start by removing friction, solving the problem, removing the obstacle. And then we're going to go and put causes in place that create success automatically. So for our first exercise, what we're going to do is we're going to remove friction at the mastermind level. We're going to take the roadblocks, we're going to take the distractions, we're going to try to take the conflict out at the very biggest level of the circles of cause, at the mastermind level. And when we take conflict and friction out at this level, it affects all of the levels. It actually dramatically affects all of the levels inside of this circle. So first, what we're going to do is I'd like you to make a list of the people in your life that are influencing your mindset in a negative way. Okay? They're influencing your mindset in a negative way. I want you to make a list of the people that are influencing your motivation in a negative way. I want you to make a list of people that are influencing your mastery in a negative way, and people that are influencing your money in a negative way. All right, so who are the people that are, that you can, your gut just tells you intuitively that having these people close to you in your life are influencing your mindset, your motivation, your mastery, your money in a negative way? They're just not healthy for your financial future. Okay, so start writing these people down now as they pop up. And I'm going to continue to comment here. So what we want to do is we want to identify those people that are creating a lot of friction. Okay? And if they just pop up in your mind, just write the name down. And we're working specifically on the mental, emotional, and physical levels. We want to identify those people that are really creating friction. Now, this might be tough, okay, because there might be someone in your family that you realize is always talking negatively about money. Or maybe they're saying that they hate rich, successful people, or rich people are bad, or maybe they're always criticizing you every time you try to do something new. A lot of times these can be the people that are closest to us. They usually are. But we need to write them down because we have a tough decision to make. Okay? So list the people in your life that are influencing your mindset, your motivation, your mastery, your money in a negative way. List the people in your life that are creating friction for you mentally, emotionally, and physically. So pause the audio now and take about 5 minutes and list all the people in your life that are creating friction, influencing you negatively, mentally, emotionally, physically, financially. When you're finished making your list, come back and start the audio again. Okay, good job. Excellent. Okay, so a couple of questions here that I'd like to address. Lance and Al wrote two interesting kind of question / comments, and I think they're very telling. One of them from Lance is says, "Do the names of my employees count? because wow, are some of them poor-minded? And then from Al, he says, what if you have given birth to these negative influences and they are still at your care? Teenagers. Okay, Lance and Al, now you are talking. These are great questions. What's interesting, though, in your comments and questions here is that I don't hear you taking responsibility for this. Okay, Lance, if you have employees, I don't know if you realize this, but you hired them. And Al, I don't know if you realize this, but if you have children, you made them. Okay? So these influences on you, okay, you're actually the biggest influence on them. So if you really want to go upstream, both of you are going to get tremendous value. Okay, so tremendous value out of zooming out, thinking at a higher level, and then becoming the change that you want to see in the world, because you're going to influence your employees and your teenagers dramatically. Okay, so I think that's kind of funny almost how those two questions were very similar. Okay, so here's a question from Brett. What are some tangible indicators we can look for as red flags for those whose negative influence... Let me say that again. There was a beginning part. Basically, Brett is saying that the gut check is a little ambiguous to him. What are some tangible indicators we can look for as a red flag for those whose negative influence on us around these issues? So, Brett, you know, gut check, actually, it might sound ambiguous, but it's not ambiguous at all. All right? We all have a very, very powerful system that you might call your intuition or the natural intelligence of the being, that we can think of something and then notice how we feel about it. And some things will make us feel good and some things will make us feel bad. And our gut will actually respond. You know, this might be a little woo-woo, but they're actually finding brain cells in our gut and brain cells in our heart. And there is some speculation that this might be why we tend to feel things so strongly in our gut and our heart, and why they interact with our brain in this way. And then I'll answer your question. Tangible indicators might be someone who you feel starts conflict with you, okay? Or someone who likes to argue, or someone who speaks negatively of themselves or other people, someone who doesn't like people that are successful, someone who talks negatively about people that are successful financially, someone that seems to just naturally be resentful anytime another person has success, people that like to argue with everything that you say. Okay, so these are tangible indicators, but I highly recommend, Brett, that you start paying attention to your gut and how you feel, because it's actually your best guide. Okay, your best guide. People that I meet that, for example, are in negative, conflict-ridden relationships that are really dragging them down. Even, I hate to say it, people that are in psychologically or even physically abusive relationships, I used to think, those poor things, they're all victims. And what I've realized now, after actually talking to a lot of people like humans and asking them questions, is I've realized that most of these people knew it early on, but they stayed. And they had a choice point where they knew they should have left, but they did not. Their gut, their intuition was telling them, leave, but they didn't. There were always early warning signs, and then there were, you know, bigger than early warning signs, and then it got worse and worse and worse, and they stayed in. Now, I'm not saying that it's right to abuse people or in any way siding with people that are abusive to others, but we oftentimes stay in even when our gut tells us, get out. So start paying attention to how you feel and integrating that, because it can really be your ally. Okay, so I'm getting some questions here that aren't quite on this topic. Okay, so let's stay just to this. Okay, here's a question from Nick. What is the process for dealing with a person that is negative in one aspect, say money, but positive in another, like mindset? Oh, now we're talking, Nick. All right. This is what it all comes down to in life, is making these decisions. And what I've found is that most of the time, if someone is negative in some aspect of life, they're probably a lot more negative. It's like the iceberg. There's a lot more underneath that we don't see. Because negativity that surfaces is usually about something that's much deeper inside of a person. And what we all tend to do when we're attached to another person, and I'll call back to these abusive relationships that some people get themselves into, okay, what they do is they rationalize it and they say, well, the person that's hitting me is actually a good person and I can see it. They just get a little bit angry sometimes and they beat me up. Okay. Now I'm talking about something that's not funny here, but I'm trying to drive this point home that our mental systems for rationalizing negative influences are very, very, very powerful. So the process is what we're going to learn in the next section, which is start adding more powerfully positive influences to your life, and these will take care of themselves. Okay, here's a question from Sanjay. There are certain situations where it is difficult to change, and in parentheses here, it's genetic heritage. How do you influence your parents, whom you love and care about, to stop being negative and start being positive, as an example? Boy, these are great questions. We're getting right down to it. Sanjay, you can't change them. Okay? You can't do it. You can't change them. But what you can do is you can help set up the conditions where they see it as in their own best interest to change themselves. Okay, now that might sound like double talk, but you really can't convince people of things. You can't change them. But what you can do is give them enough information so that they convince themselves, okay, and they change themselves. But you can't be attached to it. And asking a question, you know, how do I get my critical parents to stop being negative? Okay, that's one that'll torture you for a long time. What I recommend that you do is you start adding positive examples to your life, again, which we'll be learning about in the next section, and let your parents see what happens to you as a result of you taking control of your own life, because you're also an influence on them. Here's a question from Francis. How do we get rid of those people if some of them are my coworkers and I still have to work with them? Do I literally have to change my job? Excellent. Again, Francis, now we're getting to the heart of the matter. So part of all of this is about taking responsibility for your own life. That's where all of this kind of goes upstream to. If we follow the thought stream all the way back to the first ideas, it's about taking responsibility for your own life and thinking for yourself. If I said, Francis, if you had it to do all over again when you were getting your job, would you do it differently? Right? You'd probably say, you know, I would do it differently. What I would do is I would apply for the job, I'd do the interview, and then I would ask to meet all the people that I would be working with, and I would interview them too to figure out if they're negative. Because if they're critical, negative, they add a lot of friction, they plant seeds of future conflict, I'm going to want to know that up front so I don't take the job in the first place. So that's a, you know, it's a short answer to a long involved question. But this particular issue here, this is the biggest one. Okay, this is it. This is as big as they get. And this doesn't just apply to your financial life. This applies to your whole life. And this is the kind of thing where it requires us growing up being very stark about what's really happening in our lives and take complete responsibility. Okay, here's another one from Mandy. I support three middle-aged siblings who are either mentally or physically handicapped. I'm part owner of the house they live in, and I pay the mortgage. I currently can't afford to do that anymore. Morally, I feel obligated to support them. Physically and emotionally, I don't have the skills to retrain them, but I'm strapped for money. I'm involved with them on a daily basis, which is huge emotional drain. If I had more money, I could more easily distance them from me. Does this make sense? You know, Mandy, it does make sense, but the question you ask is, does it make sense? Not something specific, okay? You didn't ask me, you know, some specific element of you know, what you need to do. Now, all of us, of course, have complex situations in our lives that involved family and loved ones. And, you know, honestly, on a regular basis in my life, you know, some family member, I'm talking to them and I get triggered and I throw up my hands and I think to myself, you know, how is it that I got to come into this world where I figured out how to get so many things working the right way, and yet I can't get this human being to realize that whining and complaining about everything in the world is not working for them and it's not making me want to spend more time with them, right? So we all have, you know, folks that we need to support emotionally, psychologically, financially. We all have our burdens, so to speak, okay? But it also comes down to responsibility, okay? You taking responsibility for all of this. And the, you know, the terms that you're using here, kind of obligated and strapped and so forth, you know, those are terms. How empowering are those to you? Nah, I don't know. I'm going to recommend the same thing that I've already mentioned a couple of times, which is in the next section, we're going to learn how to start adding more positive influences to our lives, which gives a net benefit, okay, of pulling us in the right direction. And it also starts gradually taking up more and more of our time so that we have less and less to devote to those things that are pulling us down. And ultimately, it makes us more powerful so that we can support the people that we love and that we care about and that for whatever reason aren't in this program, aren't interested in developing themselves, or don't have the means or the power to do it. So we can take care of them as well, because ultimately that's what it's really all about.